As we continue to get to know the state legislative primary winners from June, who either have token opposition in November or are running unopposed on Election Day and will be heading to Albany next year, we're turning our attention to the 38th Assembly District in Queens, where 11-year incumbent Mike Miller was ousted by Jennifer Rajkumar, who joins us now to discuss her campaign and much more. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thanks, Dave. So happy to be here.
So why did you decide to run for Assembly this year?
Well, my parents immigrated to this country from India, and my mom was born in a mud hut in India. They came here with just $300 and a suitcase, and they settled here in South Queens in this district. And I ran for this office because I wanted to give a voice to the many immigrant populations in this district and others who have been underserved and overlooked for so long.
And how has that manifested itself, this feeling that they're being sort of overlooked when it comes to the state legislature?
Well, I think that the district really spoke this year. And we proved through this election that the sky is the limit for our community. I was so thrilled to make history as the first South Asian woman to be elected to a state office in New York. And I know I'm certainly not the last one. I am here to help all of the talent in our community that's coming up. After I won, my phone rang nonstop for 2 weeks straight. I had Bengali families calling me and saying, our entire family voted for you. My grandfather, my niece, my aunties all came out and voted for you. Guyanese, Punjabi, Latino families all called me with such pride. And those calls from so many voters really touched me. And this victory really belongs to them. And so my office is going to be a place where all of these immigrant communities can come and receive the help that they need. And my hope is that I'll be able to help immigrants navigate American institutions like our courtroom, our educational system, and government. Because immigrants in South Queens, they've come to this country filled with dreams and aspirations. And my goal is to make those dreams a reality.
Is that a heavy responsibility, having a large immigrant community that really puts a lot of their hopes and dreams on you?
It is, but it's also a pleasure to work with everyone and to have such an inclusive team and an inclusive campaign. What was really remarkable about our election was that we increased turnout by over 3 times. Because this district is one of the lowest voting turnout districts in Queens and one of the top 5 lowest voting turnout districts in the whole state. And we changed that and increased the turnout by 3 times. And I just am so proud of the people of South Queens who spoke and of my incredible campaign team made up of such a diverse group of people, all coming together passionately for change.
Did that expansion of the electorate mean that we saw a much more diverse electorate than we might have seen in traditional years when fewer voters turned out?
Yes. We saw a very heavy Latino and South Asian turnout. And it took us effort to get there. I remember knocking on doors as far back as December when it was freezing cold outside. And that's when we started engaging the minority electorate and really going to neighborhoods where there's historically low turnout, like South Richmond Hill and Ozone Park, and knocking on all of those doors. And I remember even knocking on Christmas Eve, and it was freezing cold outside. It was almost like those movies where someone is like climbing the Himalaya and they say, I can't feel my toes. Because we were just, you know, freezing. And I remember actually shaking a voter's hand, and my hand was like an icicle. And right now, these memories really make me smile because it was all of this hard work that we put in. And in the end, it really came to fruition, and you saw incredible minority turnout.
You ran for Assembly unsuccessfully 4 years ago in Manhattan. What did you learn from that experience, and did anything from that run, you know, did you use anything from that run to inform this race?
Definitely. I think that I've had such an incredible journey, and through the wins and the losses, I have become stronger at every step. I believe very strongly in the words of JFK, who said, "The life of service is a constant test of your will." I have certainly found that to be the case, but I have gotten so much stronger over time, and I have really tried so many ways to make a difference in my time. My whole career has been about experimenting with all the different levers of change. So after I came out of law school, I became a civil rights lawyer because I wanted to represent people who didn't have a voice, like domestic violence victims, workers who didn't get paid a fair wage. And then I realized that if you want to make a difference, you really need power. So I did a total 180, and I got politically involved, and I ran for office. And my first office, actually, Dave, was before assembly. I had run for district leader when I was 28. And at that time, I ran against a 28-year incumbent. And people really said, well, she's a nice kid, but she has no chance. And I remember that starting out very fondly because I remember I announced my very early district leader campaign on a grassy field with the Statue of Liberty behind me, because I said, I'm the daughter of immigrants, so I want to announce in front of the Statue of Liberty. And there was no press there, and there was only 8 people, and I stood on a stump, and I said, I want to run for this position. But over time, I have gotten out there, and now it's no longer 8 people, but it's, you know, over 100 people. And the movement has just grown over time. And also, I have learned so much about how government works. After I had run for assembly before, something very surprising happened. The governor actually said, you know, come work for me. I would love if you work for me. And I thought he was joking, but he wasn't.
He's not known for his jokes.
You'd be surprised. So I went and I joined the administration as the director of immigration affairs during the age of Trump. So when Trump was elected and was pushing all these restrictive anti-immigrant policies, I was pushing back against that. And one of the greatest things I got to do was build a historic program, the Liberty Defense Project for New York State, which provides counsel to immigrants who can't afford counsel in legal proceedings. And it was the first of its kind in the country. And I got to lead and create that from the ground up. And it's now a $31 million program. And what it means is that no immigrant in New York has to be alone in detention without any help. And so, you know, along with that, I got to be a surrogate for the governor and in representing immigrants all over the state. I traveled from the farmlands of the north. I mean, I was up in the north country by the Canadian border helping Guatemalan farm workers. And I was all the way down here in South Queens as well, engaging with New Yorkers across the state. And so now that I'm elected to assembly here in South Queens, I have all of these tools and all of these levers of change that I can pull, and they're going to help me represent my constituents, and I'm so looking forward to that.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Jennifer Raj Kumar, who ousted an 11-year assembly incumbent in a Democratic primary this summer.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.
We're continuing our conversation with Jennifer Raj Kumar, who wrested the Democratic nomination away from an 11-year assembly incumbent this summer and is expected to take office in January. You were one of a handful of primary challengers to oust either Democratic incumbents or beat establishment-backed candidates in the assembly, but it seems like you don't necessarily represent the same ideology as some of your new peers, all of whom are on the far left of the political spectrum, some even identifying as democratic socialists. So how would you describe your political ideology?
That's correct. I was backed by no political machine, either on the right or the left, when I ran. And I'm proud of that because I'm truly independent. I am completely unowned by anyone. So what that means is that I'm going to make decisions based on my own convictions and what I believe is truly right and wrong and what I believe is best for my constituents. And that's it. I'm not going to be swayed by any outside interest groups. And I think that puts me in a position of remarkable strength to serve the people very well. I would describe myself as a common ground, common sense Democrat. And what was remarkable about my campaign was that we really united people across ideologies. I was able to win in neighborhoods that were conservative. So Trump Democrats voted for me, and also progressive Democrats voted for me. Those who were voting for Bernie Sanders also voted for me in large numbers. And I was able to secure the support of the national co-chair of Bernie's campaign, Ro Khanna. So I was so proud that we were just able to unite people across ideology. And building common ground is going to help me push through initiatives that will benefit the people.
So then I guess when it comes time to actually govern in Albany, do you think you're going to be more on the side of, say, incremental change as opposed to efforts that might overhaul entire institutional settings?
I believe in bold action that makes a meaningful difference in people's lives. So I'm all about bold action, but I believe it should be smartly done. And so I have built strong relationships with people across the ideological spectrum. And in Albany, I'm interested in working with everyone, including my friends downstate who ousted incumbents, as well as those who have been there a very, very long time. One thing I have learned throughout my career is that you never know where you may find allies. Allies come in all shapes and sizes, in all colors, you know, of all age groups. So I think one of my strengths is building coalitions. And I think at the end of the day, to make anything happen, to make any change happen, to push anything through, you really need to build coalition. And so I'm looking forward to that.
How do you think the state should go about closing its multi-billion-dollar budget hole?
Well, I think that is indeed the question. I think, you know, $13 to $14 billion budget hole, and our unemployment numbers in New York are now 16% as of last month, which is double the national average. So, you know, I believe that, first of all, we should look at the very interesting economic recovery bills that are being floated, such as there's one bill that's a business interruption insurance bill that I think is interesting, which will give help to struggling small businesses, the extra help that they may need to stay afloat. I also am going to make it a priority to protect the workers in my district through things like closing the tipped wage loophole and also passing the sweat bill, which allows workers to recover their stolen wages. But more directly to your question, I do believe in a fair and equitable tax structure that's based on people's ability to pay. And I also believe in, you know, cutting waste within government. So we have to spend smartly when they do spend.
We're speaking with Jennifer Rajkumar, who ousted an 11-year assembly incumbent in a Democratic primary this summer and is expected to take office in January. It's pretty well documented that female political candidates experience just high degrees of sexism during their runs. And I imagine that's probably even worse for young women like yourself. And I'm curious if that is the case and whether you experienced overt sexism on the campaign trail in 2020 or in 2016 or in previous runs for political office.
Well, I mean, yes, there has. It is unique. I think that with young women running now, it's certainly unique and new. And I have experienced so much being a woman in politics. But the thing that really strikes me the most is actually how good women are at politics and how welcoming the electorate is of women candidates. I think that people really like women candidates, and I think that my success and the success of so many women now shows that. I think women are often very good at building a coalition. So I think that the future is very bright for women candidates. I think that oftentimes as a woman candidate, people may not be used to it, but that's also a good thing because people realize, well, she offers something new, something that we haven't seen before. And definitely we need newness in government in every way. So I think at the end of the day, I'm very optimistic about women in politics. I think we're going to have a woman president soon, a woman governor, a woman mayor. I think it's all going to happen within the next 10 years.
You raised more than $250,000 for your race, which is a lot of money for an incumbent, let alone a challenger. With the caveat that you did contribute some money to your campaign, how did you go about bringing in the bulk of your money, this really impressive amount?
Thank you. It was pure hustle. Most of my career has been pure hustle. So all I did was I just worked really hard to meet people and to ask them and to convince them that I was worth investing in. And people often say that young women of color can't raise money in big amounts as much as other people. And I wanted to prove everybody wrong. So I just worked really, really hard at raising that money. And I was so glad that my efforts came to fruition.
You met with Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie in August. What was that meeting like? What did you guys talk about?
It was actually a very pleasant meeting. He bought me a chocolate cake to celebrate my victory, which was very much appreciated. And it was a very nice discussion. Very open and very comfortable.
Did you guys talk about what you would like to do in 2021 and some of your priorities for the future?
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit about my race and my background and what committees I might like to serve on, what issues concern me the most, such as drug addiction and mental health. But I have known the speaker for about 10 years since I was first elected district leader, and I have always found him to be someone that fosters an open channel. There's a saying that a good friend stabs you in the front, and I feel like the speaker will let you know if he's unhappy, and he also is always willing to discuss ideas that you may have. So that's how I've come to know him, and really looking forward to being in the assembly under his leadership.
So it sounds like you'll likely support him for another 2 years as speaker when you take office in January?
Yes, I anticipate doing so because, I mean, it's important not to take for granted all of the historic legislation that has passed under his leadership, such as, of course, the sweeping criminal justice reforms, raising the age of criminal responsibility, speedy trials reform, which is very important to me as a civil rights lawyer who values justice, Also, all of the voting reforms that passed, such as even early voting, which was instituted. So, I mean, I think given that, I don't see any reason why I would not support it.
I think coming into your race, you were still kind of considered a bit of a long shot, an outsider. At what point, though, did you, like, know you were going to win this race? Was it election night? Was it after the election? Was it leading up to the election with some sort of polling or something? When did it become clear that this was your race?
You know, it still is not clear sometimes. I still can't believe it. I think it took me, like, 2 weeks after the election to really realize that I had actually won. The night before the election, I remember talking to the campaign team in the office. And none of us knew how this election was going to go. And I remember speaking with them and saying, do you think people got the message? I mean, do you think South Asians are, for the first time, going to turn out this time? Do you think Latinos are going to come out and vote for me? I mean, did anyone hear us? And, well, the answer became clear when the results came in.
We talked about the history that you're poised to make as the first South Asian woman elected to the state legislature. On the top of the ticket, you've got Kamala Harris, who has the potential to be the first vice president of Indian descent. What did her nomination mean to you, and what does her potential role in the White House mean to you?
It's really incredible that we are on the verge of making history and having a South Asian woman as a vice president of the United States. That's so historic and meaningful to so many people. I really respect Kamala Harris and her whole history. You know, her name is actually, her full name is Kamala Devi Harris, which is an incredibly Indian name. And her whole history has been one of hustle and hard work, which I certainly identify with and respect. So it's really incredible, and it has really energized a lot of the South Asian community, both in my district and nationally. And along with that, it's amazing to reflect upon incredible women that have changed the course of history, such as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who just passed away, who was actually my favorite Supreme Court justice. And just reading about her life once again and all of her amazing work, it's just amazing how far we've come and what remarkable women like her have done. And now, as the presumptive assemblywoman-elect going in, I'm just so optimistic about the future.
Well, we've been speaking with Jennifer Raj Kumar. She is the likely next assembly member for the 38th Assembly District after winning a Democratic primary this summer where she ousted an 11-year incumbent. Jennifer, thank you so much for making the time, and we look forward to seeing you in Albany.
Thank you. See you there.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.